Hello and welcome back to the Highway to Hoover podcast, a production of SEC Extra over at d1baseball.com. I'm your host, Joe Healy, joined as always by Mark Etheridge. We are here to recap week six around the SEC, another exciting weekend of action, a lot more sweeps. We'll talk about that here momentarily. But first, I have to let you know that every episode of the Highway to Hoover podcast this season is brought to you by Brock's Gap Brewing Company in Hoover, Alabama. Don't forget to mark your calendars for our live show on the evening of May 22nd. That is the Monday prior to the SEC tournament getting underway. We'll have more details on how to reserve your spot and all that jazz as we get closer to that event. But go ahead and just mark your calendars now. Visit brocksgapbrewing.com for more information on the venue, Brock's Gap Brewing, the beer they serve. If you're local to the Hoover or just the Birmingham metro area, pop into Brock's Gap Brewing. Also, right now, if you follow them on Instagram, I learned, you can help them vote on the name of their newest beer. So there you go. Kind of a cool little deal. They're having like a March Madness style bracket to determine the new beer name. So go check that out on Instagram for Brock's Gap Brewing. Mark, another big weekend. I don't know. I've been asked why there are so many sweeps through two weekends of SEC play, and I don't really have a good answer. I don't know if there is a good answer. I just think it's kind of one of those things. But regardless, that's where we are 2 weeks into the season.
Yeah, I mean, you and I aren't the only ones who don't know. I posed that question several times this weekend. I mean, talked to Tim Corbin about it, and he should know. He's had two of them already, and he's like, I don't understand it either. You know, it's just one of those things that we all feel the league is as deep as it's ever been, but yet we're, you know, the same teams are able to win three times in a row, and that's certainly unprecedented. This is not the way that SEC baseball usually goes. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, more than half of the league is 0-6, 6-0, 1-5, or 5-1. I mean, that's kind of where we're at. And I do think it does set us up where we're going to have some stories, which is good for you and I, because you know we like the story aspect of the sport. Might be stressful for the coaches and players involved, but I do think it kind of sets up a situation where there's going to be teams that are off to some of these 5-1, 6-0 teams that are off to really quick starts are inevitably going to kind of come back to the pack and fade mm-hmm. and have to hustle at the end, and vice versa, that some of these 1-5, 0-6 teams are going to make a run at some point. And we'll see that happen over time. So that will be fun. As the season goes on, we'll obviously start to talk about which teams those are and everything else. But for now, it's been this kind of weird phenomenon where every weekend we're getting mostly competitive games, but in some cases, not really competitive series. Let's jump in with LSU and Arkansas. That was the biggest series of the weekend. And it lived up to expectations in some sense. I mean, the Friday game was excellent. Was it Friday or did that get moved?
Friday.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Friday. There was so much, the last two weekends, there's been so much movement that I get confused on which ones get moved where, but regardless, yeah, so that Friday game, great pitchers duel, Hunter Holland, Paul Skeens, and then Hagen Smith coming in for Holland. And then, you know, Arkansas just kind of exploded in the 10th inning to kind of pull away and make that game look, you know, it's always weird when you have a score like that that went to extra innings. But alas, that game was really good. But the last 2 days, LSU really took it to Arkansas pitching. And I thought that was kind of the story was I'd been talking a lot, and you and I have talked about how Arkansas hasn't had it easy on the mound. And they just kind of figured it out. And it looked like maybe that was the case. And maybe this is just an LSU thing. Maybe if they were facing anybody but LSU, that would have continued. But as it was, it sure looked like LSU solved the riddle that was Arkansas pitching.
Yeah. And see, that's the thing. When you – like Arkansas's really throwing their two best guys on the first day. So it sets you up great for that day, but, you know, there's two more games. So you got to find those innings somewhere. And they're down some guys. And – you know, some weekends I would expect that to work out fine and people are able to get the innings like it did, you know, the weekend they played Auburn. However, when you're dealing with the down the line pitchers who are even elevated, you know, even higher than you expected when the season started, you're going to get more inconsistency. And I think that's where we are right now in Arkansas. It will be interesting to see how they handle Alabama, who has not really hit a whole lot once SEC play starts. What's going to happen there? Is Arkansas, are they going to pitch like they did against Auburn, who was a pretty good lineup? Or is it more like the second two games against LSU. I think that's a fascinating kind of subplot of that series next weekend.
On the LSU side of things, Dylan Cruz and Paul Skeens are pretty good at this, as it turns out. Two guys who are having historic seasons, 100%. Absolutely. I mean, I think you and I talked in this podcast about, you know, last week about Dylan Cruz still hitting over 500. Well, he raised his average last week. I mean, from like 518 to 531 or something. And I've said a couple times, a couple radio hits I've done last week, I said, I don't think that Dylan Cruz is going to hit 525, which is the SEC single season batting record. Shout out to Dave Maganin in 1983. But I don't know. Maybe he could. It's hard for me to see with the pitching being so good. I mean, the pitching in 2023 is on a different level than it was in 1983, you know, 40 years ago in the SEC. So, you know, I have a hard time seeing it, but like, I don't know if betting against Dylan Cruz to do anything seems like just a fool's bet at this point.
Yeah. The problem is, you know, he goes 2 for 5 in his average drops. Right. So it's those kinds of things. That's so tough to sustain. And Skeens, I mean, you can just write it down. It's going to be 2 to 3 hits allowed, 0 to 1 run, 12 strikeouts, maybe a couple walks. And that's what he's going to be every game. That's what it's been so far, regardless of the competition level. It's been that. No one's that consistent.
Yeah, everyone gets
a bad game. And to this point, you know, maybe it comes this week. Tennessee's coming in. That's, you know, it's a high-profile series, lots of good players. But oh my goodness, he's been, you know, like the quote, you know, he's just at another level, another league maybe than the opponents he's facing.
Yeah, he was our Cruz and Skeens were our SEC player and pitcher of the week this week, and first time one team has swept those awards. And I noticed as I was looking at Skeens stats that in every start this year, all 6 starts, he's thrown at least 6 innings. He's given up either 0 or 1 runs, and he struck out 11 or more in every single start. I mean, that's just incredible consistency. And this was the best lineup that he's faced so far. And he passed the test really with flying colors. And I think it's understandable that we might get asked about how well does he hold up over the course of the entire season. And I actually don't have that much concern about that. I mean, it's a concern with every pitcher, right? But I don't have any more concern with him than anybody else because for a couple of reasons. One is his body. He's physical. He's strong. You know, he's not slight of build. That helps.
He's a lot like yourself.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Mark. Wow, that's very nice. That's the nicest thing anyone's ever said.
About your twins.
I've just got that, like, stereotypical starter's body. You know what I mean? But, you know, so there's that. And he also had a pretty heavy workload at Air Force innings-wise last year. And, oh, by the way,
he was a catcher.
That's a good point. I actually forgot about that part. He was playing some catcher. And also, he was a student at the Air Force Academy, right? I mean, no shots at LSU academically, because it's not just the academics. It's also that he was involved in the military drills, right? So, I mean, he had a lot on his plate at Air Force, both on the field and off the field. So I just think like an innings load is like, whatever, you know, like I just think he's going to hold up maybe even better than he did at Air Force for those reasons, because he's so focused now on he can just be a regular student and then focus on baseball. And I think that's going to be really, really good for him down the stretch. So I don't have too many concerns in that regard. But what I wanted to ask you about concern wise is Thatcher Hurd an issue in the rotation now? I mean, it's his second straight kind of short start. And I wonder, though, how I'll pose it to you is that something that LSU will need to address at some point, do you think? Or do you just think because Skeens has been so steady and he reduces your bullpen innings on Friday, and then Floyd has been pretty good as well, do you just kind of understand that, hey, with Hurd starts, we just might have to dip into the bullpen really early? And because they have good arms in there, that might be okay. I don't know. I'm kind of curious where you fall on that.
Well, typically Sundays for most teams are kind of a work in progress. And with LSU, it's so hard to find any flaws. You know, where's the hole in this team? You know, if it's Sunday, it's probably okay, right? As long as you've got guys like Edwards pitched amazing behind him, what was it, 4 scoreless innings of relief? Hurd is a high ceiling guy. You have to think that working under Wes Johnson, he's going to figure it out. I think as long as you're winning games with him, it's kind of an investment for the postseason. You keep running him out there as long as you believe in him, as long as he's able to give you something and, you know, lead you to believe that there's that payoff is there and you're still winning games. I think you just status quo this bad boy and just let him go and hope that the other guys, you know, behind him when he struggles, because he hasn't struggled every start, right? It was just kind of this the last two haven't been great. So it'll be interesting to see. I'll be down there this weekend, and we can chat about it there and see what the staff thinks about that. If they're more inclined to be patient for the long-term payoff, or, hey, you got to produce because we got a whole lot of guys that we feel can. Well, where do they line up on that?
Yeah, personally, I fall closer to where you, I think, fall, which is that, we're winning games. Like, let's just kind of say, I mean, he's clearly talented. There's no doubt about that. So, like, let's let him work it out. Let's let him try to figure it out. And we've got bullpen guys, so let's just ride it out. I think that's kind of where I fall. But it is something to monitor as we move forward.
Yeah.
Let's move on to Florida sweeping Ole Miss. That, of course, drops Ole Miss to 0-6 on the season. It is interesting that the two Mississippi clubs, 0-6, and I know it's something you're fascinated by, just the idea that they've kind of arrived there differently. But also it's interesting that Ole Miss is kind of in this place again after last year, where it was different, because last year really was the roller coaster for Ole Miss. They were number one, and then they hit the 7-14 nadir, and then they obviously got going again. But so they're 0-6. Florida looks strong again. They're 5-1 in the league now. You were there for that doubleheader, the first day of the series on Saturday. I'll open the floor to you on what your big takeaways were from Florida and Ole Miss.
Yeah. Well, let's start with Ole Miss. They're 0-6, and if you look at – I mean, they play Vanderbilt, who's as hot as anybody in the country right now, and they play Florida, who's as talented in that offense and starting rotation. They're just at another level, maybe the best in the country at both. So the schedule makers did not do them any favors. So I do think that from an offensive perspective, they haven't really hit the ball yet. But I think that's more of a function of who they played. I think their offense will be fine. I am concerned on the mound. They're not getting deep starts, and then the bullpen guys are not producing at a consistent level, right? So when you don't get that, Mississippi State's kind of going through that too. When you don't get a deep start, but then you don't have a lot of confidence in the guys that you're bringing in behind them, you're kind of in a tough predicament. I mean, you're trying to stretch guys out because they're probably better than the guys you're bringing in. And why are you leaving your pitcher in? Well, I don't really have a lot of options here. And we got a three-game series, and you can't throw the same guy all three games. So I think that's where Ole Miss is. They're trying to figure it out. Hunter Elliott should come back mid-April. That's the prognosis at this point. So they need to figure it out until he can get back, and then – he's got to ramp up, once he returns. But offensively, there's a lot to like. I do think that that's a team that's going to give problems to pitching staffs. Now, in the other dugout, I saw Cags give a laser show this weekend. He had four homers, hit one in each game, right? At least one, had two in the first one. And then Florida hit 10 home runs as a team in the three-game series. It's a next-level offense, and they're not just hitting home runs. They're hitting dots all over the park. It's as good a lineup as you're going to face, and they're just getting some guys healthy who've been missing. Langford came back and played. Heyman came back and played. I really like that team right now. Now, the question has been who's, the starters, and the starters weren't great this weekend, to be honest with you. Who's can come in and nail down the game and be the bridge guys between Neely, who's been pretty good at the end of the game, and the starters? and they pitched okay this weekend. Abner was really good. He pitched in a couple of games, and he's come along. You know, he's a really talented guy that had high expectations for him last year, and it just really didn't happen. He looks like a weapon at this point. So if they're getting middle relief, and if Neely's the guy at the end of the game, then there's not a lot of holes. And Florida could be a team that, you know, it's a pity they don't play LSU in the regular season. That would be an incredible series. But those could be the top two teams in the league right now.
I tend to agree with you. I was on a Sirius XM show this morning, SEC this morning, and I said that I think I like LSU's team more than I like Florida's at this point, but that's probably the end of the list. And it's been kind of incredible because I think the lineup at this point has maybe eclipsed the pitching staff for reasons for optimism. And we were all hyped up, understandably so, about the rotation. And to your point, you know, Brandon Sproat had the one incredible outing against Alabama 2 weeks ago, but he kind of reverted back to the form he had been previously against Ole Miss. And Waldrop has just been pretty good this year, not really great. And, you know, Caglione's last two starts have been not been as good as his first four. Yeah. Right. He's not like him. He walked eight yesterday. It was kind of incredible. Still not really getting hit, but he's just not really locating. So the pitching has actually slipped a little bit from where it was early, but the offense has more than made up for it. And I think your points on Ole Miss are well taken as well. I just – Their ERA through, and it's, you know, it's six games, small sample, but their team ERA is almost nine in SEC games. Yeah. I mean, the silver lining, if you're looking for it, is Xavier Rivas has been pretty good, actually. You know, I was a little bit worried. You know, he was good his first couple of weeks, then he started to take on water a little bit as time moved on, and I kind of thought he might be a guy that we look back at the end of the year, and he never really kind of got back into the swing of it, but he really has kind of fought his way back and is now pitching better than anybody in their rotation. And
he was their best guy this weekend.
Yeah. So I'm a little worried too in putting two, and I'm not saying anybody in the program is doing this, but I think it's an easy thing for fans to do is put too many eggs in the Hunter Elliott as coming back basket, because I can guarantee you his first couple starts are going to be on fairly strict limits. Yeah. Right. And so, okay, so now you're talking about May already. And then how good is he? You know, there's just so much unknown there. And will it help at a bare minimum from a depth standpoint? Yes. But the idea that he's going to be the guy he was in last year's postseason run right from the jump, maybe that'll happen. That'd be great for Ole Miss. It would change the entire complexion of their team. But I don't know that I would bet on that. And that's just kind of a tricky thing.
Yeah, Ole Miss, they just really need to tread water and not be out of it. So when he's, quote, back, he can be a weapon that can lead them to get – even if they're kind of behind the curve of where they expected to be, that you can make that late season push kind of like they did last year and be a team nobody wants to face in the postseason. I think that's the most likely path for Ole Miss.
Yeah. What did you see from Grayson Saunier? It seems like a guy who's really kind of seems like he's struggling to get his footing. And I wonder, part of the reason I ask is I wonder if, let's say Elliott does come back and looks pretty strong, does Saunier move off and they keep Doherty in the rotation, which is not an ideal solution, or do they move Doherty back to the bullpen and give them an extra bullpen arm? Yeah. You know, but it just seems like Saunier is really spinning his wheels.
Yeah. He might benefit from a midweek start. I mean, he has faced Vandy in Florida, and looks to me like he was just on the low risk skis. He's just not quite ready for that level of competition right now.
Yeah. Well that's understandable.
Yeah, I mean, he's in a tough spot, but he's one of the best options, if not the best option there. So it's obviously very talented kid's going to have a lot of success. Just, he's having to take some lumps right now, which he's not the first pitcher to go through that. But,
Yeah. I keep repeating myself. Don't forget that Gunnar Hoglund was not an immediate star for Ole Miss, right? So exercising patience with these guys is important. And my last thing on these teams is that I'm with you in not being overly worried about Ole Miss's offense, but also because these are two of the most talented pitching staffs they'll see all season. But I would have liked to have seen them do a little more at some point. I mean, they're hitting under 200 as a team in six SEC games. Now it's 199, so it's just under 200. But you know, but there's only a couple guys really swinging it well. Calvin Harris is one of them. You know, but it's just you know, it just hasn't been any sort of semblance of the offense that they were the first 4 weeks of the season. And so again, I'm with you. Generally speaking, although I have to admit I'm a little bit taken aback by how meager their offensive performance has been. Yeah.
We'll learn a lot when they go to A&M, because A&M's kind of they're kind of scuffling on the mound right now too. So
for sure, that will be an interesting matchup, because yeah, A&M, and we'll get to that here. Actually, you know what? That is a great segue, because that is next on our list. Tennessee gets kind of back on track with a sweep against Texas A&M. I would say on A&M quickly, I don't think it's time to panic on A&M necessarily. Consider the competition. They've played the teams that we had ranked 1 and 2 in the preseason rankings. And though Tennessee hasn't totally lived up to that number 2 ranking, they're clearly still in that conversation among the best teams in the country. So consider that when thinking about what A&M is or isn't. But that being said, that was our segue point, is that the A&M pitching, after I said the first few weeks of the season, when the offense was struggling so badly for A&M, I was saying things like, hey, that the pitching staff has actually kind of kept them afloat. Well, now that table has kind of turned. They fought Tennessee pretty well offensively. And, you know, like in that finale, they really battled to try to get back in that game, and they took them to extra innings in one game. So I thought the offense actually did all right for themselves. But the starting pitching just flatly wasn't good enough. And they're shifting some things around. They're trying some different things. They're clearly trying to mix and match, but it hasn't quite taken hold yet.
Yeah, I agree. You covered it. I mean, that's the thing with A&M is they've got to get more out of their starting pitching. You just can't fill that many bullpen innings against good teams and be successful. That's not the recipe. But offensively, it's not great, but it's okay, right? And I think once they face somebody who's not, you know, Skeens and Dolander, maybe we have a little bit different take on them. And again, they're going to see Ole Miss this weekend, who's kind of piecing it together. So I'm really eager to see both sides of this coin. A&M, you know, with their offense against Ole Miss's pitching, and then the inverse of that with A&M's kind of pitching struggle and Ole Miss hasn't hit much. Who's going to elevate this weekend? Or maybe they all do, right? Maybe there's a little bit of both based on the matchups. But thinking about Tennessee, their starting rotation, I don't know if my expectations were too high, but I'm, you know, once SEC play started, it hasn't been the results that we saw last year. And I'll get to see them this weekend. I'm excited about their trip to LSU. What's going to happen? Again, LSU's very powerful lineup. Does the Tennessee rotation rise to the occasion here and really keep them in the games? Because if they pitch the way they've done the last couple weekends, LSU's going to stomp them. I mean, that's, you know, that's a sound bite and a hot take, but that's the way I see it. And I do think that the offense has kind of come around. The offense carried them in the sweep over A&M. Pitching was just okay. And okay is fine, but our expectations were here, not here. So it's all about – and I know they're feeling that too, right? We all felt this was the best rotation because they were probably the best last year and everybody's coming back. So that's – it's just kind of an interesting dynamic with the Vols right now. And how are they handling all those preseason expectations, so much expected – both for the team and the rotation. And now it'll be kind of cool for them because they'll go into LSU as the underdog. So that's a different role for this fall program the last few years.
Yeah, I'm trying to think when the last time Tennessee would have gone into a series as like the heavy underdog. Like it's got to be, I mean, I guess early last year before we knew what they were, there was probably a weekend there early last season
when they went to Ole Miss and swept them. I mean, I picked Ole Miss.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's long story short. I mean, it's the role they've not had to play in a long time. So, and maybe to your point, maybe it'll be good for them. The A&M offensively, a couple things to remember about A&M's offense is, I mean, one is they're still getting healthy. Brett Minnick has still not returned. There are some who think he's actually their best bat ultimately in a perfect world. So there are reinforcements theoretically coming. The other thing is that A&M on paper was a good offense coming into the season, but it's probably never going to be a glamour offense because they had a very good offense last year, but it wasn't the prettiest thing you've ever seen, right? So I do think there is a scenario where A&M actually ends up being a very good offense, but we don't necessarily appreciate them for that because they do it a little bit differently. Like they're not South Carolina hitting 60 home runs already or whatever it is. They're not Tennessee last year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, their offense tends to look like a ton of walks and getting mm-hmm. to the bullpen in the fourth inning of a game. And
against these teams that are struggling on the mound, that's going to work beautifully. It really works because you're going to get deeper into those pins.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, and obviously you'll have a lot more on Tennessee this weekend, but I'll be fascinated to see how the starting pick, because I'm with you. Their numbers have been overall have been good, but yeah, Dolander and Burns, the first 2 weeks of SEC play just haven't been up to the standard. And yes, our expectations are probably too high, but they are too high because of just how good those guys were last year. I mean, they were almost unfathomably good last year.
They earned those expectations.
For sure, yeah. Right. These expectations were not out of left field, right? So, fascinating series coming up. Mark, as he's mentioned a couple times, will be there. So we'll have plenty of Tennessee LSU coverage throughout the weekend. So look out for that. Where I was this past weekend was Columbia, South Carolina. South Carolina sweeps Missouri. Kind of a weird series. We had a wild game one where Missouri had an 8-5 lead go into the ninth and South Carolina had a four run rally with one ball that left the infield. Like it was, it had everything. It had, you know, a hit by pitch. It had two infield singles. It had a dropped third strike that allowed a runner to reach. I mean, had an error. It really was kind of just a weird, ugly rally, but got the job done. And it was a great atmosphere there Friday night. And Saturday was kind of a strange day because it starts off with, you know, four batters into the game. Missouri starter leaves with injury, just the third straight game in which a Missouri pitcher went on the shelf. And I think that kind of set the tone for just a weird day at that doubleheader. South Carolina really runs away with the second game of that series. Noah Hall pitched really, really well. The offense was on Mizzou early and often. And then the finale, Mizzou, give them credit. I mean, it would have been really easy for Mizzou to say, you know what? Not our weekend. Let's go home. Like, let's be done here. And they push South Carolina to 12 innings. Now they lose, but they push them to 12 innings. They get 5 innings of relief from their center fielder, Ty Wilmsmeyer, who is a two-way guy. It's not like they picked a guy from random. Like, he is technically a two-way guy, but he's pitched four times previously in their career he's pitched. So this is not a guy who has been a key cog in the bullpen.
To be pitching him with a game on the line.
Correct. He threw 75 pitches. So that's really not where they expected to be, but it was the reality of where they were, right? So I've got a lot more on this series. You can see it on SEC Extra. I've got just some notes on both South Carolina and Mizzou coming out of the weekend. But my big takeaway for South Carolina is a couple things. One is that the pitching depth is still where its bread is buttered. All three of its rotation guys have professional careers in front of them. Will Sanders, who's the most famous guy in the rotation, has actually been the worst of the three. And he's not been awful. I mean, he wasn't very good against Mizzou on Friday, but he's not been awful. He's just been kind of okay. But Noah Hall and Jack Mahoney have been better. And they legitimately have 6 or 7 guys in the bullpen who are real dudes for them, at least so far. And that's pretty rare. Most teams have 1 or 2 guys who are real dudes and then a handful more that they can use situationally. I mean, these guys have 6 or 7 stoppers at this point in the bullpen. So it's an embarrassment of riches there. And the offense, which I was a little bit dubious of coming into the season, even as they were putting up big numbers early, I'm coming around on really largely thanks to a couple guys. One is Ethan Petrie, the freshman phenom, who, you know, big, strong, physical kid. He was expected to be a contributor on this team, but I don't think anybody expected him to be this. You know, he's really been one of the best hitters in the SEC through 6 weeks. And the other is Gavin Casas, the transfer from Vanderbilt, who, again, you know, he was going to be a guy they're going to put right in the lineup and let him go. But I mean, he's right there with the leaders. I mean, no one is close to where Caglione is home runs wise, but he's right there with the leaders in the SEC in home runs and has been just such a game changer in the lineup. And those are two guys that I don't know were kind of question marks coming into the year that have just been huge, huge successes. And I think it, like I said, it really does change the complexion of the South Carolina lineup where they're not relying on some guys who have been in extended slumps or, you know, some guys that maybe they were really looking to make big leaps. Instead, it's kind of been these two guys who I don't want to say come out of nowhere, but really have emerged as stars.
Yeah. And that's kind of what separates what South Carolina is doing is some of their new players have emerged. That we didn't really have that, you know, have any expectation for, where a lot of these other teams, you know, you've got new guys that either aren't performing or aren't performing at a level that's required to elevate. I mean, South Carolina is 6-0, and regardless of the competition level, and it's been pretty solid, you would not expect that, right? Heading into the season, I didn't. I thought, hey, they may win both of those series. They're not going to sweep them both. But and what it's done is it's kind of raised our expectation level or the ceiling maybe for this team that they aren't going to drop those games. You know, they've lost, what, one midweek game all year? They lost the Charlotte game. I think that we're at a point where maybe we need to start looking at South Carolina as one of these, you know, one of these upper crusts. Maybe they're getting into that group with LSU, Florida, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Tennessee, or whoever else you want to add. I think South Carolina is making their push to knock one of those out. And you know, they go to Mississippi State this weekend. That's an opportunity, we'll call it, for them to get three more wins, at least two, get a road series. So it's kind of there. Things are lining up for South Carolina, and this is a program that's hungry, you know, a fan base that's hungry for some success, and they're set up perfectly, at least to this point, to get it.
It's a great point you brought up about him going to Mississippi State this weekend, because I mean, their eyes have to be as big as saucers, basically, that, yes, you know, 9-0 in the SEC is absolutely on the table for them. Mm-hmm. And already at 6-0, to your point, we've kind of changed the way you think about this team to where now I'm not saying go ahead and book your hotel for the Columbia Regional, but I'm telling you that that's very much on the table at this point. Yeah. You know, being a team that hosts, at least for the first weekend of postseason play, that's the path that's kind of opened up, because you're six wins on the good. And if you think you know, if the baseline for, hey, you're at least in the conversation to host is 16, well, you're obviously well on your way there. So, and getting to 8-1 or 9-0 would really put them on that course. Understanding, of course, that the toughest series are their schedule is just incredibly backloaded, but the funny thing is you start winning games like that, you start to really believe. And I think there is some, ultimately talent is going to win out, but their talent is good. And if they start to really believe in themselves, I think they can, you know, get that kind of momentum. So it's a great pitching staff. I love the pitching staff, the lineup, you know, maybe it's not one of the elite offenses in the SEC because there are so many elite offenses in the SEC. I don't think it's LSU or Florida, but it's good enough. It's more than good enough. Like, I think it is really, really good. So, and then quickly on Missouri, like, there's just no way to talk about this team without talking about the pitching injuries at this point. You know, Sam Horn, the two-sport guy, second weekend of the season, comes off the mound injured. He's supposed to be able to maybe come back here in a few weeks. We'll have to see. I have heard he's been back to throwing a football. It's a little bit different. So still a couple weeks out from him possibly returning. Tony Newbeck gone for the year. No real update so far on Chandler Murphy and Ian Losey, the two guys who came out of the games over the weekend. So we'll have to see. But obviously the depth, you know, is really sapped at this point. So Mizzou's going to have to patch it together. They still have some nice arms. Rorick Maltrude has been great. Cool. Their midweek guy, Logan Lunsford, at this point, they might not have another option. But even before the injuries, Logan Lunsford has really earned his chance to pitch on the weekend, I think, with how he's pitched in midweeks. You know, Zach Franklin, their closer, had a tough night on Friday, but generally speaking has been very good for them this year. They've still got some cards to play in the pitching staff, but, you know, really kind of a bare minimum number of them at this point. That's just kind of the reality. Their offense is plucky. I think they showed they're going to continue to play hard, but man, the deck is just stacked. I don't really know any other way to put it.
And it's really unfortunate because they had so much success, and you know, again, we're talking about expectations, and I don't know that many of us really felt they were going to be right in the thick of this in the middle of the conference, and that's where they are if they're healthy. But if you lose that much off your startings, you know, your key top pitchers, I mean, it's so tough to be able to absorb those losses. You just – most staffs don't have the depth. And in Missouri, I mean, let's face it, they're one of the have-nots in a league of haves. That just makes it that much more challenging. So it's unfortunate because they look to be on the on a path, and maybe they still are. But this is certainly an obstacle that is concerning.
I mean, that's the thing about it. You bring up a good point because if you'd have told Missouri, independent of any other information, you're going to be 3-3 through two SEC weekends, they're probably taking it. Mm-hmm. You know, with Tennessee, the team that came into the season number two in the country, and then a road series at South Carolina, 3-3 means they won one of those series. Yeah. Now we know now we have the context of knowing how that played out, and so you and I are a little more pessimistic about the situation, just given the details we have now. But you can look at it optimistically and say, look, if they can cobble something together, they're still in position. So that's the positive outlook, but it really is going to take, they're really going to have to find some things. I guess I'll put it that way. Like they're going to have to uncover some stuff to really, or some of these injuries, Murphy, Losey, turn out to not be serious.
Right? Maybe it's a week or two and they're back.
Right. Right. That could also be the case, and that would be helpful, obviously. So there are paths, but the road did get tougher. I think that's safe to say. Kentucky's winning streak was snapped over the weekend against Alabama. Alabama got the Sunday game in that series, but Kentucky wins that series to move its record to 5-1. Kentucky continues to impress. They can really pitch.
Yeah.
The offense is really good at creating chaos. They bunt for hits. They squeeze bunt. They steal bases. They hit and run. They move runners. They do all that stuff. And they kind of have to. It's not the most physical offense. They've got a couple guys who can run the ball out. But they got a home run from the unlikeliest guy in the lineup, Grant Smith, yesterday. They could do that on occasion. But for this team to be as successful as they're going to have to be to make the postseason, they have to really pitch. And so far this season, they are really pitching.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. The starting staff has been really good. And they got Logan Martin back for he was kind of the opener Friday as he returned. So it's fascinating to see how they're going to use him and how they juggle the other guys around. Darren Williams just kind of followed him and dealt like he's been doing all year. So it's a good problem to have, right? You got four weekend starters. How do you want to work those three games? And I think the other thing is we have seen in the SEC, or really in competition in general, that if you put pressure on defenses, a lot of times you can make good things happen. And Kentucky's making an art of that. In the two SEC series, they stole 18 bases, 18 out of 19. And using the bunt game, using hit and run, moving runners over, hitting against the shift, all of those things that us old people used to like watching people do before everything was, three true outcomes or whatever you want to call it. That's exciting. I love to watch that kind of ball, and they're making an art out of it. And it's kind of just shows that you don't have to only win one way. You can do other things to win games. And it's been fun to watch. I do think that once they played Mississippi State and they played Alabama. Those are two teams that are kind of struggling to field the ball right now. If you look at the statistics, maybe it's because they played Kentucky, but also let's see what happens when they see some other teams and see if they handle it a little better. And what happens if those teams are up to that challenge?
I mean, if nothing else, Kentucky does give you a little bit of a zig when a lot of the rest of the league zags. I mean, it's such a, throughout college baseball, but especially in the SEC, we're living in such a homer happy environment, mm-hmm. that teams do just see a lot of teams that just want to stand there and hit, right? And so if nothing, it's kind of like, this is a weird comparison, but it's kind of like how it if you're in the American Athletic Conference in football, like it stinks that once a year you have to play Navy. Yeah. And if you catch Navy in week 8 after you play Houston and before you play UCF, even though those are two teams going to the Big 12, but you know what I mean? Yeah. Like that stinks.
Yeah.
Right. Exactly. You don't really have enough time to practice it. It's, you know, I think there's something to the same thing here where it's just Kentucky's not going to stand there and hit, and they're going to play a different style of game that we just don't see. And so I do think there is a benefit to that, but to my previous point, it does make their margin for error a little bit lesser, and they still really haven't had to play from really behind, you know, they, because they were ahead
the most Pigeons this weekend. Score. Yeah.
They are Pigeons, and that's great. Like, again, I will say that's not a criticism. Like, that means they're doing what they want to be. They're controlling these games. Really, the one instance I can think of where they had to play from behind was in the game they ended up losing to Wright State earlier this year. And to their credit, they were down pretty big in that one and actually made that a close game, two or three runs maybe ultimately in the end. But so they did show a little bit of ability to make a run. So we'll see. Maybe that is in there. But right now, I mean, they're you talk about things opening up for South Carolina. South Carolina has more staying power for me than Kentucky, if you're making me choose. But the path has really been opened up for Kentucky to be the math is on their side when it comes to getting back to the postseason for the first time since 2017. And that's huge for that program. Mm-hmm. Alabama on the other side, they've done enough to kind of stay viable, if you will. Like, they're 2-4. They've not gotten swept. It's kind of understandable with Florida. That was a road series. Yeah. Winning one game there was the expected outcome, more or less. This was a little different against Kentucky at home. Now, we now know what Kentucky is, so maybe you understand a little bit more there, but it really just kind of feels like they've held serve, for lack of a better way of putting it. Now, they're going to have to flip some series as the season goes on. You can't lose 2 or 3 in perpetuity and get to the postseason. That's not how it works, but they have kind of allowed themselves to tread water a little bit, but they're going to have to find another gear here shortly.
Yeah. The Kentucky series was one they needed to win at home. That there's no two ways about that.
That's fair. I was being a little bit too kind with that. Probably. I think you're right. I mean, it's a series that they just needed.
Yeah. I think one of the things that's been surprising to me is, I mean, they're a veteran team. They play a lot of baseball. They're not running the bases. I mean, they had some comedy of errors this weekend against Kentucky, and it hurt them. It cost them the Friday game and almost cost them the one game they won. It's just those things are preventable. Right? Those are unforced errors. And for, you know, you expect that with younger teams. You don't really expect that with a team that's played as much as they do. So that's concerning for me. They're pitching. They moved Luke Coleman into the rotation. He was not that great compared to, you know, pitching shutouts in midweek. Didn't really work out that well. So we'll see what they want to do. Garrett McMillan is somebody who they keep waiting to return. Hopefully we'll get an update on that soon. That's really – they're hitting Hess. They feel pretty good about those two, as they should. It's – that other spot, and then what happens at the end of the games, right? Is Riley Quick the guy? Is Cade Woods the guy? They've each had their moments where they're just really, really unhittable. So it's – their pieces are there for Alabama. It'll be really fascinating to me. They go to Fayetteville. That's a really difficult place to play, and then you're going to see some good arms. But I think on Saturday or game 2, game 3, they're pitching – is probably about equal to Arkansas, I guess, for reasons we discussed earlier. So it's just a question of can they hit with them, and that's going to be what's going to decide for Alabama. Are they kind of get themselves into a pretty big hole early and have to claw out like Ole Miss is faced with, or can they steal one of these and kind of bring it back to the median and set them up for a stretch run where they can you know, do things like make a regional and even host a regional, you know, which is kind of where they were hoping to be at the beginning of the year.
Cade Woods has been the, for me, that's the guy through a couple of weeks. And that's some of the feedback I've gotten from people who have seen them is that Cade Woods is the guy for them. I mean, he's been key in both of their SEC wins so far. So he kind of seems like the, you know, Hitt and Hess have been interesting because they're getting it done a little bit different ways. Like Hess is throwing a ton of strikes, but is getting hit a little bit as a result. Yeah. Hitt doesn't throw strikes nearly as consistently, but he's a lot harder to hit. So no pun intended. So that's kind of been an interesting dichotomy there. Okay, Vanderbilt sweeps Mississippi State. So, I mean, Vanderbilt, like clearly we collectively shoveled dirt on the Vanderbilt offense much too quickly this year. Now, they have faced the two Mississippi schools. Yeah. That helps. However, I do think it's pretty clear that they are a much better offense than we were giving them credit for early, and maybe we're not allowing for how good the pitching they'd seen was, right? Sure. So that has been impressive. I think that's the, from the Vanderbilt side of things, I think that's the big takeaway. And on the Mississippi State side, I actually don't think there's really all that much more to say other than just it, that there isn't anything else to say. I mean, you were there on Sunday, so I guess I'll give you the floor just kind of for your takeaways from the weekend.
So let's start with Vandy. So with Vandy, I do believe that some of the lumps they took earlier, they have a lot of new guys, people in different roles than they've ever played before. They just needed a little time to gel. And boy, when it happened, it has happened. I mean, they're hitting .366 in SEC play with 19 home runs. I mean, this was a team that was last in batting coming into the conference season, and now you can't get them out. I mean, they'll take walks, they'll hit behind runners, and now they're hitting for power too. It's a really good offense at this point, and they're hot, and they're confident, and they're believing in themselves, and then also, I mean, on Friday and Saturday they've got elite starters. And Sundays, you know, it's okay. But, you know, it's after watching those two guys Friday and Saturday, everybody kind of looks mortal, right? So I do think that it's a team that's best baseball is still ahead of it, too, you know, because they've got so many players kind of developing and moving into new roles. I mean, they got Georgia next weekend, who's another team that's kind of figuring out on the mound, you know. I think those numbers might continue again for another week. Now, in the other dugout, Mississippi State, they just aren't – they one, kind of like what we talked about earlier with really a couple of teams, they aren't getting good starts. They don't have confidence in the guys behind them. And it's just kind of snowballing. They're not playing with confidence. It's kind of – I walked into that stadium – on Sunday, they had a really good crowd, I understand, on Saturday. And on Sunday, after two straight drubbings, it was not a lot of people there. And that's really concerning because nobody loves their college baseball more than the folks in Starkville. And it's kind of a it's a they're at a place where they're losing hope. And that's a dangerous place for a program to be that you're kind of expecting to lose. And they won the national championship 2 years ago. It's really concerning. And I don't know how to fix it. There's not. I mean, there are some players that are injured on the mound that they hope can come back and contribute. But, you know, their best arms right now, they got two freshmen and they've got a transfer. And you just wonder, okay, well, where's the development of the returning guys? And I know there's some injuries there, but that to me is the missing piece, is you don't have that continuity from last year's staff. It wasn't that great, but they did have some returnees who threw some decent games for them. And that's the, for me, it's being able to find innings and outs just to keep you in the game so you're competitive, because their offense can score a little bit. And I think if they can stay in the games, that's going to you know, if you're not getting beat, you're not getting run ruled, then you actually have a chance to, you know, to get back in the game and let your offense help you out. You don't have to shut people out. You just got to not get run ruled and stay within striking distance. And that's the problem right now. It's these last two weekends have been as bad from an SEC, you know, standpoint as I can remember. I mean, not just for Mississippi State, but for anybody. Nobody gets beat like this. So how do you got to flip the script. They need something good to happen, and they need it to happen soon. And, of course, they got South Carolina, who's undefeated, coming in, who's playing really well. So, and that's the problem in this league. You know, there's no get-well time. You hope you can do it in midweek. And honestly, with their pitching the way it is, I mean, who do you even throw in midweek? Because you need all hands on deck for the weekend.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. You know that phrase where it's like, if you look around the room and you can't find the sucker is you? Yeah. You know, it's kind of the same thing here where it's like, if you're looking around the league for a get right series and you can't find the get right series, it's because the get right series is you. I mean, because the rest of the league is looking at them going like, okay, we can make some hay against that team. And that's kind of where they're at. I think that's totally fair at this point. And that's why there's not a lot else to say here. It's the same problems it's been. And I think it's stark that you had some guys who early in the season provided some hope at various points that have just tailed off, right? I mean, Sanger looked like a revelation, and hey, this is the guy who is maybe going to pull us out of this and be a real dude in the rotation. And he's had moments, but ever since he got jumped into the weekend rotation, it's gone from really good to just kind of good to struggling. And it, you know, he hasn't been the same guy, and they moved. It felt like one of the last cards to play was, you know what, let's just put Nate Dome in the rotation and let's see what happens. And that didn't work either. So,
and you know, at this point, why save him to close games? Because you're not competitive to get there. You, at this point, you have to start him and just hope, right, that he can give you better than what the other guys are giving you, and your offense can keep up, and then somebody can get some outs at the end of the game. Because certainly holding him – and getting beat 26-3 and 19-5 or whatever those first two games were, that's not accomplishing anything.
Yeah. So, we'll continue to monitor that situation, both with Vanderbilt and Mississippi State. Vanderbilt obviously continues to kind of, I mean, just the numbers. I mean, they have 19 home runs in six games in SEC play. They have 38 on the year. So they've hit half of their team home runs in the last six games. Just incredible. Our last thing this week recapping is Auburn winning a series against Georgia. You know, at the risk of being like kind of too cute about it, it just kind of felt like this was a series Auburn had to have. You know, you talk about series where you can kind of get right. You know, Georgia, with the struggles they've had on the mound, it was kind of ripe for the picking, and Auburn took care of business. And so I think there's a tough road ahead for Auburn given what they're lacking on the mound with Joseph Gonzalez still out. And frankly, week by week, it seems like it's getting a little more pessimistic about, you know, the future prognosis for him being back at some point. So they're going to have to piece it together on the mound. So I do think there are a lot of challenges for that team to remain viable as a postseason team, but you have to give credit to Auburn because this is kind of what they do. They deal with some of these hindrances on their roster, and they just figure it out. Like, they have a history of doing this. They just figure it out. And I guess simple enough, Georgia's just not quite there yet because Georgia has its own issues where it's trying to figure out what they are on the mound, and they really couldn't figure it out in the same way. And so Auburn ends up taking 2-3.
Yeah. Well, Georgia handed them that Thursday game. I mean, it was a two out ninth inning error that led to the extra innings. I mean, they had the game won just to make the throw to first. Okay. And, you know, but the thing with Auburn is they're not getting – their bullpen has been okay at times. They just have to use it so much because their starters are not going 2-3 innings, right? And that is a very challenging way to win a three-game series if you're getting 6-7 innings total out of your starters, not in a game, in the series. So the offense is – I'm not worried about the offense. They're getting guys healthy. Cooper McMurray came back and gave him some big hits. Bobby Pierce is playing again. it's a lineup that's tough to pitch to. Bryson Ware is having an incredible year. Of course, Ike Irish is a doubles machine. I mean, it's he's another guy that's just really, really exciting to watch. The question is going to be, you know, can they figure it out on the mound? Can they piece it together? You know, it's not like you can go out and pick up a free agent. You got who you got. So, and they go to Gainesville and this weekend, and that's, you know, that's just not the best time if you're struggling on the mound to go to that place against that lineup. So that's, you know, I'm kind of pessimistic for them heading down there, but they'll be able to compete offensively. I think they'll be able to handle that velocity that they're going to see. And looking at Georgia, again, it's the same story we've said with some other teams. They have a couple of pitchers they feel good about, and then after that, it's just inconsistency. And that's the thing with – when I see Georgia's staff, you know, there's it's kind of like a different bullpen guy every game, and one day he's great. And, oh, man, they found the guy. And they roll him out there the next time, and he can't get anybody out. And it's got to be so frustrating, you know, when you're pulling those strings and you look for trends and you look for history of success and all that. And it's just – it's like a dartboard, man. It just can't figure it out. And I love the offense. But, you know, and they, speaking of tough matchups, they got Vandy this weekend who's hitting as well as anybody right now. And again, it's so challenging. You can't get well. And if you're struggling, you're going to have to get well against a really challenging opponent. And it makes it fascinating for folks like us to talk about. But that's where Georgia is right now. I don't know what they do. Because their starters have been, you know, Woods is giving you 5-6 innings usually. Sullivan, you know, some days he gives you 7, some days he gives you 2, right? So it's just trying to figure it out, and that's where we are right now with the Bulldogs.
Team ERA is 8.34 through two SEC weekends. That's obviously not getting it done, and Woods has been better than the ERA shows. If you look at his peripheral numbers, he's actually pitching pretty well. He's had a little bit of a big inning thing, or at least he did this past weekend. And that's part of it. You have to limit that stuff. That's not to excuse it, but I think he's pitched better than that ERA shows. And Sullivan's been the weird one where, I mean, he just pitched so well in non-conference, and I was starting to buy into him being a guy that's turned the corner. But ultimately, I think part of the concern that I had about him coming into the season has come to fruition, where it's that he just doesn't have the most swing and miss stuff. And the SEC, a coach earlier this season told me that the SEC demands that you have swing and miss on the mound. It just does. If you're a pitch to contact guy, you better be historically good at doing that, because otherwise, you know, you're just leaving yourself open. And it seems like he's getting hit. So
especially this year with all the home runs being up, you know, for whatever reason, talk about the ball, talk about whatever, but this year pitch to contact is not a good recipe.
No, not in this league anyway. So Georgia's, you know, it gets late early in the SEC, and it feels like they needed kind of a circle the wagons weekend, whether it's this weekend or upcoming, to get them back on track, because much like they're in a better spot than Mississippi State. I only make the comparison to Mississippi State in that the offense at Georgia is good enough to win plenty of ball games. It's just going to come down to what they figure out on the mound. So all right. Well, Mark, I think that's we are closing in on an hour here. I think we've covered all the ground we need to cover. Again, Mark is heading down to Baton Rouge this weekend for really the most anticipated series on the SEC slate this season with LSU Tennessee. Tennessee, maybe some of the shine came off it a little bit with Tennessee getting swept by Missouri, but it feels like they've regained that momentum with how they played last weekend, and now it's gone back to being a situation where it's going to be it's already highly anticipated, and I think that the atmosphere is going to be great. Follow Mark on Twitter if you're not already doing so. He'll have updates throughout the weekend. Obviously, subscribe to SEC Extra if you want to read Mark's coverage of a big weekend in Baton Rouge. Looking forward to that. I know Mark is as well getting back down to Baton Rouge for this series. Been something that I know you've looked forward to, Mark, since really Absolutely. The schedule came out.
Skeens and Dolander on Thursday night, man. Sign me up.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's going to be great.
No kidding. With the new pitch clock rules and those two throwing, you might, you know, you might be able to grab a late dinner after.
Yeah, I'll make reservations.
Yeah. So yeah, big weekend ahead in the SEC. I will be doing some stuff from home. I'm home this weekend, so I'll be manning the extra bases blog a little bit more heavily. Mark's been doing the heavy lifting on that the last couple weekends. We will change roles more or less, and I'll take over some of that while Mark is on the road. So we'll have all the usual stuff coming at you this weekend. Again, subscribe to SEC Extra if you have not already done so. Mark and I would be humbled if you'd give us that opportunity to show you what we're bringing to the table. We're super proud of the work we've done so far, and the feedback has been really positive on it. We're grateful for that. So thanks for listening. Thanks, as always, to Mark. Thanks to Brock's Gap Brewing Company for sponsoring Highway to Hoover all season. We'll talk to you all soon.